Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan All-Stars, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist show in the country. Now, here's your All-Star host.
Welcome, everyone, to Alan's All-Stars, the home of militant moderation, where we groove forever to the tune that Alan laid down for us. We want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, your host today, as we slide from one scandal into another in D.C., but something tells me this one's going to be a lot weirder and get much different press coverage than last week's scandal. Last week's scandal, I guess 2 weeks, was the strike, the double tap strike in the Caribbean. And Pete Hegseth, who the press and the Democrats told us was a homicidal maniac, supposedly ordering all these innocent fishermen to be killed in a military strike, that is fading away. That is all fizzling rapidly as the real story of the attack comes out. And the new scandal, and the far, far more serious one that is percolating in D.C., is one the Democrats and their press do not like and are already scrambling to deal with it. And that is the capture of the J-6 pipe bomber. And this is the old story, and that's what they're going to tell you, by the way, as this heats up over the weekend and goes into next week. I am here to tell you that you will very quickly be told that this is an old news story, even though it just happened. And in a couple of days, Democrats and their media pals will be saying, why is anybody still talking about this? It's an old story. But it's not an old story, and it's a gigantic scandal with potentially enormous implications. People could go to jail over this. We'll have to see. That isn't how it usually works out. But you know how that goes. This is something where people like James Comey, for example, former FBI director, have got a lot of explaining to do for what happened here. And the gist of it is that we had the January 6th pipe bomb threats. And as you'll recall, that involved some unknown individual who supposedly called in or placed pipe bomb threats at both the Republican and Democrat headquarters in Washington, D.C. And this was before everything went nuts on January 6th with all the stuff that happened there. This was going on right before that. And according to what we've been told for years, this unknown, mysterious individual, this shadowy terrorist, disappeared into the morning mist, and no trace could be found of him ever for years on end. And for a long time, people have been wondering, how is that possible? Because they nailed everybody who so much as looked funny at the Capitol building. Old grandmas who wandered into the Capitol building were identified with DNA analysis and cameras and the internet, and they were in trouble in 24 hours or less. What happened to the guy who supposedly planted pipe bombs? How can nobody know who this was? Not a single clue as to his identity. Well, now we know who he was. There's new people in charge of the FBI. Biden administration's gone. Trump administration in control. And bingo bango, we know who the pipe bomber is. He is now 30 years old. His name is Brian Cole. And the FBI arrested him on Thursday on charges of planting the pipe bomb. And by all indications, as early days of a story, and you know, the rule stands, I think, that it's wise to wait until you know everything. But I'm just going to tell you that by early indications, it looks a heck of a lot like this guy was a left-wing Black Lives Matter activist, and the Biden administration deliberately did not catch him. They appear to have done everything in their power. They worked overtime to let him get away because it would have been politically inconvenient for them to have caught him, especially if you go back to 2021, you go back to the days of January 6th, the aftermath. The Democrats were and are working really hard to this day to make a lot of political hay about that and to make the case that all of their political enemies, all the Republicans, are a bunch of dangerous kooks and MAGAs, a bunch of insurrectionists, and so on. And it would have been profoundly inconvenient if the actual terrorist who perpetrated activities on that day was revealed to be a Black Lives Matter activist. Jake Tapper on CNN yesterday, when he announced the capture, for some reason, and I don't really know what the reason is, he claimed the guy was a white man named Brian Cole. He is not. And within a matter of minutes, CNN threw a picture of him, and he's not white. He's black. And every Shape Tackler looked like a fool. And people were watching him do this and say, how could this happen? I mean, it's just a mistake maybe, right? He just jumped to conclusions or something. But I think there's a little more to it than that. Jake Tapper is very plugged in to Democrat Party politics. They regard him as a top operative in the media. And I think Tapper was getting probably on his phone, because he's notorious for futzing around with his phone during broadcasts. I think Tapper on his phone was probably getting the early spin message from the Democratic National Committee. They were figuring out how they're going to deal with this. And the early message they're going to try to push was that this guy was a MAGA activist, or he was mad about the stolen election, or something like that. And they're going to try to at least muddy the waters and say he had some odd beliefs on both sides of the spectrum, so therefore we can't connect him to the Democratic Party in any way. And, that's not working. There's more information's coming out about him. And it sure does look like he is exactly what he appears to be, a left-wing terrorist that the Biden administration decided must not be caught, must not be revealed to the American public because of how politically inconvenient that it would be. And if that's true, again, it's early days. We're going to find out how this ball was dropped and by whom. So there's going to be investigations. I don't know if I trust the FBI to investigate itself even now, with Kash Patel in charge over there, but they say they're going to do it. And if it turns out that there was some organized directive, and you pretty much have to find a smoking gun here. You'd have to find some memos from Comey or somebody, from Biden, from the White House. You'd have to find something that strongly implies they deliberately tried not to catch him because he was politically inconvenient. If they can find something like that, oh boy, I don't know where this ends. But it's definitely going to involve some criminal charges if they can find there was some kind of political interference or dereliction of duty. You can tell the Democrats are scared by this story. I mean, really scared by this story, because the spin has been just ridiculous in the first 24 hours. They're panicking and they're throwing everything they can at the wall to try to make this look more confusing than it is, or to make it go away. And the funniest bit of spin came from Mark Warner, Senator Mark Warner, who you may recall yesterday was telling the military to stage a coup and overthrow Donald Trump. Well, he's over on KD2 Reports on MSNBC. It's called MS Now these days. They changed the name. And he said it's bad that the Trump administration is taking a victory lap for catching this pipe bomber, because it's their fault he got away, because they shifted all the FBI guys to immigration cases. So he says all these FBI officials, they've been fired for political purposes, and they've been shifted to immigration, which, of course, Democrats don't think immigration fraud is a crime. And he said that's why this guy got away. How much earlier would we have caught this guy if resources hadn't been diverted? Does someone want to show this brain-damaged individual a calendar? Would someone like to bring a calendar to Senator Mark Warner's office and take a big red pen and circle the day that Donald Trump was sworn in for his second term, and then maybe circle the day of the J6 pipe bombings? And then you could draw little hash marks through all the days in between those two dates and say, does that answer your question, Senator? See, that's the thing that's got me so intrigued by the response to this case. What Warner is peddling is asinine. I mean, you've got to be an imbecile to listen to him talk for 2 seconds and say, yeah, that must be it. Boy, I bet the Biden people were just about to catch this guy after 3 years of dogging his trail, and then Trump assigned everybody to immigration duty and he got away. I mean, really, are you kidding me? But nah, see, the reason they're doing that, the reason he's doing something this lame, I mean, he owns a calendar. He knows what day it is. The reason he's doing something this lame is because the Democrats are frantic, absolutely frantic, to muddy this story and shake it up and give the media some more angles they can run with so that they can make it all look like a big, confusing mess. And then in a week, they're going to tell you it's an old story. I guarantee you that's coming. It's going to be just like the IRS scandal. A week after it breaks, they'll be saying, why are we still talking about this? Nothing's ever going to come of it. But yeah, it's from right here, this looks about as bad as anything has looked for the Democrats, for the Biden administration, for people like James Comey, the former FBI director. But, things have looked bad for them all before. I have to remind you, Alan was a big fan of trying to track these guys down for the things they did during Russia, for the abuse of FBI power. He was as dogged as anybody I ever knew on all of those stories. And chapter and verse, he would collect all the information. And in the end, Who swung from the yardarm? Who walked the plank? Who went to the hooscow? Nobody. So maybe they'll do it again. Maybe they'll get away with it. But from where it's sitting right now, this is a big, ugly story about the political abuse of power that is entirely plausible, given everything else we know about the Biden administration and about the Democratic Party and its permanent deep state apparatus. What, after all, does the Democratic Party stand for today, if not the idea of refusing to arrest criminals? That's pretty much the entire party platform, is that the Democrats have decided that some laws don't matter and some laws don't count, and some people are above the law, and they're just not going to enforce it against people they like or support or want to see active in the country. So, man, the central principle of the Democratic Party is not catching criminals, and this looks like another example of them doing it for political reasons, and it stinks to high heaven. I'm John Hayward, your host today. We will be right back with more of the Alan Nathan Show.
Tis the season to shop at Ollie's, America's fastest growing retailer of closeout merchandise and excess inventory, with brand name merchandise at up to 70% off the fancy store prices every day. Here's lifestyle expert Kia Malone.
You got to check out Ollie's this holiday season. Holiday decorations like ornaments, wreaths, stockings, and wrapping paper, 100 square feet, are priced $279, their price $429. Also, lots of brand name toys like Barbie, Nerf, Hasbro, Mattel, LOL Surprise, and more. Up to 70% off the fancy store price. Hot Wheels, Spiral Speed, Crash Set are priced $29.99. They're priced $49.99. You'll also find Melissa and Doug up to 60% off the fancy stores. Books for readers of all ages up to 80% off the fancy store price. Other gifts like IntelliCook 6-quart stainless steel slow cooker are priced $19.99. They're priced $39.99.
For an Ollie's near you, go to ollies.com. Butterball, the best known and most loved brand of turkey in the U.S., has partnered with renowned Chef Corps brand Headley and Bennett to create the first ever Thanksgiving hosting pants. Butterball turkey talk line expert Corey Gustavik shares more.
Roasting whole turkey isn't something most of us do every day. It can be intimidating and stressful, but the right clothes can make you feel more confident and comfortable in the kitchen. That's why Butterball created the first of their kind Thanksgiving hosting pants. Designed with a fun turkey print in Butterball blue, these pants are sure to give you swagger in the kitchen while keeping all your cooking essentials within arm's reach. With custom pockets for your meat thermometer and phone, loops for your utensils and towels, and a bottle opener to keep the party hydrated, these pants will help you get a leg up in your hosting duties this year. Butterball is giving away for free one final time while supplies last at noon Eastern this Monday, November 17th.
Learn more and claim your pair of hosting pants at ThanksgivingHostingPants.com.
Adopt US Kids for multiple choice parenting.
Your daughter just had her first breakup. Do you A, put yourself in her shoes?
How could he do this to you? And for Sheila, she has split ends.
B, console her.
Oh, sweetie, this is going to happen a lot. 4, maybe 5 more times before you get married.
C, take charge.
Got to get this all straightened out. Give a little talking to man, mano a mano. Hey, Steve! It's now a good time? No? Okay, no problem. Bye.
Or D, help her find a new boyfriend.
I know a great place to meet boys. The internet. Nice, single boys. Never mind. How about some ice cream?
As a parent, there are no perfect answers. But you don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same.
For more information on how you can adopt, visit AdoptUSKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt U.S. Kids, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned, accessible homes and vehicles, and access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs. at PVA.org.
Welcome back to Alan Nathan's All-Stars. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Now, I said at the top of the hour that the controversy over the double tap stripe in the Caribbean is fading. It's not over yet. Still a lot of things to be settled about this. And one of the lingering questions from this story was whether the Democrats, who were military veterans, who made that contemptible video urging the military to start questioning the orders of President Trump is illegal, were actually breaking the law or not. You can have whatever opinion about its propriety, but was it illegal, and are they going to face consequences for doing it? Here with us to talk about it is Leslie Corbley, author, poet, columnist, attorney, and author of the book Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother. Welcome back to Alan's All-Stars.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's the question of the hour, I think. It seems as if the political impact of this double tap thing is beginning to fade because it's increasingly clear there wasn't anything improper, and the Democrat storyline is not finding a lot of purchase on this. And some people may still be queasy about using the military to go after drug dealers, which is a bit of a separate argument. But was it wrong? Was it illegal? Was it actionable for these Democrats who are military and CIA veterans to make a video telling the troops to question their orders? Was that just bad or was it illegal?
I wish I had a clean cut answer for that, but we're in such, I think this is really indicative of the kind of environment we're in, where there's a lot of questions like that, that frankly, historically were never raised. They just simply weren't questions we've had to deal with in American public life. I mean, the last time we would have had anything even akin to this is, you know, maybe the Civil War. I'm trying to think of when there would have been anything like this happening, you know, where you would be encouraging the military to do that, or members of the military to do that. I don't know. I think it's a good question. I think it's one the public needs to raise. I think more than anything, it's indicative of how, of the political climate we're in and the changing nature of our governance in American public life now.
Now, I remember back in the 90s, there was a big storm in the press and in politics about the idea that you don't question American politics on foreign soil. And the phrase was politics stops at the water's edge, was what they said. And the idea was that if you go on a foreign trip or something and you start bad-mouthing the administration, which was a Democrat administration, Clinton at the time, that you're dissolving cohesion, you're making the country look bad, you're hurting us and making it hard for us to do foreign policy. Well, where is that sentiment with this? Where this video from the Seditious Six is very obviously going to damage American military readiness, and it's going to make our potential adversaries think our military is less determined and willing to fight than it actually is, because one of the major political parties is telling them to disobey their orders.
Sure. I mean, there's a lot of problems, many of which you've raised, but it's interesting because if you just look at the headlines of how the story is being covered, I think that there's a couple of problems. The first is that, for example, I think Time magazine not long ago had an article that was titled, "Is it illegal to urge troops to refuse unlawful orders?" But that, of course, presumes the orders are unlawful. And that's where you get into the ambiguity that comes here, which is, okay, is it actually unlawful? And is unlawful going to end up becoming a politicized category, right, based on the eye of the beholder, essentially, of, okay, which part? Now, I'm not saying that that will always be that way, but there's a lot of just general problems that emerge when you have this becoming normalized. I mean, I think you're absolutely right that there's a lot of, I think it absolutely weakens us, I guess, on the global scale. But more importantly, I think we've crossed the Rubicon as it relates to a lot of unspoken norms in our country in the Trump era. One of them was, you know, you don't bring criminal charges against your political opponents. We're past the Rubicon there. I think this is in that vein. You know, a question to ask would be, is it illegal to urge troops to refuse unlawful orders? But I think a more important question to ask is, I think we're now at a point where whether something is an unlawful executive order depends on the view of the partisan, of the individual's partisan lens that they're looking at it through. That's, I think, more troubling. If that becomes the determination of what's unlawful, we're in really dangerous territory, because then there's no sort of neutral, nonpartisan arbiter, right? And that's, I think, what's more dangerous. And the bottom line is,
that is a great point. Mm-hmm. That's a wonderful point, because I'll tell you, I'll give you an example to take a step backwards. Remember, Barack Obama was very fond of drone strikes, and he was constantly ordering drone strikes. He's supposed to be this peaceful guy, but he's killing people left and right. If some group of Republicans, let's say a bunch of Republican politicians that were military vets, had made a video telling everybody you don't have to listen to illegal orders at the height of Obama's drone strike campaign, what do you suppose the reaction would have been to that? And I'm sure that while those Republicans were being tarred and feathered in the media, the narrative would have been that they're damaging unit cohesion by substituting partisan politics for actual military law. And that's exactly what's happening here.
Absolutely. I think you're right. But more importantly, because I think that the crossing the Rubicon is really an important point, is that I think there would have been at least closer reaction to that if the same had been true of George W. Bush back in like 2000. I don't think there would have been. I think there was more. My point is the amount of unity, the amount of shared values, the overlap between the two parties is just diverging. There's almost none. And it's to the point where we're living in completely different universes of knowledge, of values, of epistemology. Again, that's I think the central idea I'm getting away from this point. I'm taking away from this is that it's not just about partisanship. It's about something much more, much deeper than that. The fracture runs really deep. So I think you're absolutely right, especially as to the Obama era. Obama was notoriously favored in the media. But I think we're just past the Rubicon. There were certain unspoken norms, and there were certain lines that neither party really would cross. And I think we're now past the point of crossing those lines. And I think that this is sort of marks a new era of political norms and political, social, and cultural norms that are going to become common in American public life that simply weren't in the prior years.
And I think it also shows how much the military culture has divested from the political culture, mm-hmm. in that there's mm-hmm. no contact there. And you have people that are politicians, even some of them who are military veterans, but they've either completely forgotten or made themselves forget what the military is all about. And now they're trying to use it in a political gambit. And we always were supposed to frown on that all the way back to the World War II era. You weren't supposed to use the troops as political pawns, and you weren't supposed to infuse partisan politics into warfighting operations when their very lives are at stake. The troops are not supposed to be sitting there and wondering, is this order illegal and do I feel mm-hmm. like disobeying it mm-hmm. because my senator just told me to?
Absolutely. I absolutely agree. I think that you're right about what this speaks to in those ways, but also I think it speaks to how, when you mentioned does it show that we're issues with unity on the global scale, I think it shows actually something that cuts much deeper. I think it shows how fundamentally fractured American public life now is, like socially, culturally, politically, you know, in governance. There's not a lot that's holding us together. We're sort of holding together by a thread, if you will. And a lot of this did come out in the Trump era. I think it's really easy for Trump to become the scapegoat for that. But the bottom line is there were a lot of underlying issues in public life that I think were being avoided, swept under the rug, and not dealt with. And Trump's candidacy and subsequent political rise and rise to power really unveiled a lot of those issues. And we're just now touching the tip of the iceberg of them, if you will.
Sure.
But I don't think it's going away anytime soon.
I think you're right. I think a lot of people are critical of the old Republican leadership, thought they went along with far too much. And Trump has been blunt in challenging assumptions. And that's why we're having these arguments. Leslie Corbley, mm-hmm. author, poet, columnist, attorney, and author of Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward. We'll be right back with more of Allen's All-Stars.
Hilton has once again been ranked number one on the world's best workplace list, according to Great Place to Work and Fortune. The hospitality leader has now topped the list twice in 3 years. At Hilton, its team members say the hospitality industry is where they can learn, grow, and achieve their career goals. Victoria, a sales director at a Homewood Suites property, explains.
Hospitality is the warmest industry that you can go into. The care, the nurturing, and the areas of opportunity are large. There are so many different elements in hospitality, and I don't think everyone thinks about the larger picture that they could fit into. Hilton has always been just a welcoming, open-armed, flexible place to work. I'm going to look forward in enjoying more stable work days and the ability to just have that work-life balance that I truly want.
To learn more about what makes Hilton a great place to work, visit stories.hilton.com/worldsbestworkplace.
Everyone wants to give the perfect gift this holiday season, and the choice is easy. Gift cards have been the most requested gift for nearly 20 years, and experts recommend knowing how to gift smart to maximize gift card joy. A 30-second safety check can spot potential problems quickly before you give the card to someone. Look at gift card packaging to make sure colors, logos, and text match others on the shelf. Feel the back for bumps or extra layers that are thicker than other cards. Check the pin covering to make sure it's smooth and fully intact. Examine edges for cuts or tears that can signal a card has been tampered with. If something doesn't look right, choose a different card from the display and give the suspicious card to a customer service or checkout clerk. Gift cards are designed for joy, and taking the few extra seconds to gift smart can make a huge difference in keeping holiday spirits bright. Learn more at giftcardsafety.org. That's giftcardsafety.org.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show.
If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon? Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Alan Nathan's All-Stars. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor with Breitbart News. The election of Zora Mamdani as mayor of New York has raised concerns about the infusion of toxic ideologies like socialism, communism, and Islamism into American politics and growing concerns that those ideas might be gaining some purchase with mainstream voters. Here with us to talk about it is Kenneth Abramowitz, founder of SaveTheWest.com, a website dedicated to saving Western civilization from itself, and author of The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. Welcome to Allen's All-Stars.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you.
It's not pretty to look at what happened in New York, because a lot of people thought at the outset of the Mamdani campaign that his ideas, his beliefs were going to disqualify him pretty quickly. They didn't. And then things came up, like him talking about globalizing the Intifada, supporting code phrases for genocide against Jews. And that didn't matter either. And he still managed to win. And so now people are wondering, did he just win for other reasons and people decided they didn't care, that they decided he didn't really mean the crazy stuff? Or does that mean his ideas are gaining purchase with the Democratic Party mainstream?
Well, it can be all of the above, right?
So, yes, it can.
First of all, I don't know who elected him in the sense that New York State doesn't keep track of citizenship. So I don't know how many non-citizens voted for him, number one. Number two, I read that a lot of the people voted for him in the last, for the first time in the last 5 years. So they registered a lot of new voters. And, but again, I don't know if they were citizens. So that's one issue. The second issue is he did strike a important issue, namely affordability. Well, everyone has trouble with affordability, right? I don't meet too many people who say money's no object. I have so much, I can buy whatever I want. Okay, sure, 1 in 100 can say that. But for the other 99 of us, we have to manage our resources. We don't have infinite resources. So he ran on a platform of affordability. I'm going to make New York City more affordable. And President Trump jumped on that when he had Mamdani in his office, saying affordability is a big issue. And I like affordability. I think that's a good issue. And Republicans should also focus on affordability. So I would say that was the major reason he got elected, namely people who shouldn't have voted, plus affordability is a universal theme. And then they overlooked the fact that he hates Jews, he hates Christians, he hates Hindus, and he hates anyone who's not Muslim. How they could overlook that, I have no idea.
That's where, you mentioned multiple explanations can be true at the same time. And I get the distinct impression that for a lot of New York voters, they heard about the crazy blood-curdling Islamist stuff that he said, and they just wrote it off as rhetoric. He doesn't really mean it, or he won't really do that. And they decided to ignore that and focus in on the affordability message that you mentioned.
Yes, I think that's a great mistake, because I'm very sensitive to words. That's one of my functions in life, is to try to decipher what bad people are thinking. And when he was interviewed, and one of the reporters said, many of your supporters believe in globalizing the Intifada, which is, by the way, code name for killing all the Jews in the world. And he said, I have nothing to say. I'm not repudiating that word. Well, that word is an incitement for genocide, which I believe is automatic disqualification for any candidate. And in fact, I would go a step further, automatic arrest you and deport you. We can't have people running around saying it's okay to kill Jews. By the way, anyone who wants to kill the Jews actually wants to kill the Christians. It's just that they don't want to say, I want to kill the Christians, because America's a 90% Christian country. So they pick on the Jews because Jews are a 2% portion of the country. But I'm very sensitive to that. So when someone says, I hate Jews, Israel's a war criminal, and we have to globalize the Intifada, to me, he should have been arrested and deported. But we don't do stuff like that, unfortunately. And so that's why he's on his way to become mayor, even though it's a huge mistake, grave mistake of America to allow that.
Well, you're right. We don't do stuff like that, but it feels like we might be edging a little closer to doing it, or at least to talking about it, because quite outside, in addition to New York and Mamdani, there's a big conversation bubbling up around the country about alien ideologies, about ethnic enclaves building up. Of course, Somalis in Minnesota are the hot example of that, but they're not the only example of that. And people are starting to realize that mass migration not only brings X number of people into the country, but it tends to put them in geographic concentrations where they quickly develop political power, and they have not the slightest interest in assimilating to American culture, nor indeed of respecting American law, American taxpayers, as witnessed in the Somali looting scandals over there in Minnesota.
You're exactly right. And by the way, I have rights. You have rights. We have rights to be managed or ruled over by Americans. If I wanted to be ruled over by an Iranian agent, which Mamdani is, I'd go move to Iran. Why do I have to import an Iranian agent and vote for him? So this is what I call demographic warfare. I monitor seven forms of warfare. Physical war. Most people think war is just kinetic war, you know, things blow up. But there's also chemical and biological. There's cultural war, which we're discussing when you fight with your words. There's economic war, legal war, demographic, and cyber. So, but the bad guys have essentially used demographic warfare against us to ship in alien thoughts, alien people, and use that as a mechanism to take over a country. We don't have to play that game, but we are playing the game, and that's Europe's playing the game, and we all Western civilization better come to its senses very fast. We cannot import enemies of Western civilization and expect Western civilization to survive.
Well, people in the United States and also in other countries, I'd say in the United Kingdom right now, it's a big topic of conversation, are realizing that maybe there's nothing they can do. They feel helpless because when they look at these hostile alien populations, the arrogant response they get is, we're here, we're not going anywhere, and you can't legally do a thing about us. Now, the Trump administration rescinded temporary protected status for a number of Somali migrants after the scandals broke out in Minnesota, but that's only a few thousand of them. That's a small percentage of the rest of them. The rest of them are pretty defiantly, through the voices of people like Representative Ilhan Omar, they're right up in your face and saying, you can't do a thing about us. We're here forever.
Well, these people are well-trained, okay? So they're not thinking for themselves. They're foreign agents in Qatar and Iran are coaching them what to say. They know the legalities of America very well, and they're using our legal system against us. Now, the Squad is a great example. They never should have been allowed in the country. They never should have been allowed to run for office. They should have been required to pass national security clearances, which they can't. And they should be arrested. They should be thrown out of Congress, arrested, and deported. But again, we haven't come to the realization that America's at existential risk. Once we realize that we're at existential risk, we might have to invoke the Insurrection Act, which has been invoked before. And I hate to say it, it's martial law, basically. People don't use that term. But we're going through an insurrection. We have to treat it like an insurrection. Otherwise, we can get overwhelmed by these foreign agents.
Well, yeah, the American people are going to be very reluctant to take a step that extreme, as is the case also in Europe and in the United Kingdom, where things have gotten very dire for them, and they're discovering that their populace begins to lose its appetite for the fight when you start talking about doing things like that, about remigration instead of just deporting criminals. That's where people start drawing the line. I think there's one other thing about Mamdani that we have to acknowledge as a third factor, and that would be the awfulness of his opposition. He practically coasted into that mayoralty, because it's entirely understandable to me that people didn't want to vote for Andrew Cuomo. And Curtis Sliwa never had a real chance, the third factor in that. He never polled over like 15%. I don't blame anybody for deciding they don't want Andrew Cuomo as their mayor. You know, it's kind of hard to discount the idea that Mamdani was just positioned better than his opponents.
Well, I just wrote an article on my website, SaveTheWest.com. It's available to the public. It's complimentary. Just go to the website. Basically, there were 20 mistakes made by our society that allowed this travesty to happen. And the mistakes were, you alluded to the mistake, that Cuomo was the wrong candidate. Sliwa was the wrong candidate. President Trump should have been tougher. Who allowed Mamdani to become a citizen? He became a citizen 7 years ago. So a lot of mistakes made. We have to fix
Yeah. A lot of mistakes made, and the looming problem that fixing them is much, much harder than making them. And that, sure. I think, is the conversation we're going to be having for the next few years. Kenneth Abramowitz, founder of SaveTheWest.com and author of The Multi-Front War, Defending America from Political Islam, China, Russia, Pandemics, and Racial Strife. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host today, John Hayward. We'll be right back with more of Alan Nathan's All-Stars.
Earlier this year, a photograph of a vibrant blue Volkswagen bus sitting relatively unscathed within a decimated Malibu neighborhood became a symbol of hope during the Palisades fire. The bus, a 1977 Type 2 named Azul by its owner Megan Weinraub, attracted the attention of Volkswagen, who offered to restore the vehicle to its pre-fire form. Now, at the Los Angeles Auto Show, Azul makes its first public appearance. Volkswagen's SVP of Brand Marketing, Rachel Zaluzik.
Azul caught the attention of people around the world, reflecting the resiliency of the people of California. We're proud to have Azul as part of the Volkswagen family.
Megan Weinraub.
When the photo went viral, I felt like the world experienced a piece of my heart. I was touched Volkswagen reached out to help, and now Azul feels like a symbol of hope more than ever before.
Volkswagen also has pledged donations to the California Fire Foundation to support first responders and their families around the state. For more, visit VW.com.
Hi, this is registered dietitian Mia Sin. I have tips to stay healthy through the holiday season and into the winter months. Now, I love the idea of a wellness getaway, and Victoria, British Columbia is the perfect place to refresh and revive. You can set your intention for the new year this January in Victoria, British Columbia at TourismVictoria.com. Now, I'm a huge fan of superfoods, and Chilean salmon is a nutrient powerhouse. It's high in protein, omega-3 fats, and vitamin D, and a source of other nutrients that can support your immune health. Now, sorghum is another great food to incorporate. It's versatile, naturally gluten-free, and a natural source of antioxidants and a good source of protein. And finally, supercharge your wellness regimen with plant-based supplements. Rainbow Light's new liquid herbal tinctures feature sustainably harvested plant-based formulas crafted with care. Find them at the Vitamin Shop and VitaminShop.com. For more, visit NutritionByMia.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking, but no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly, everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk. with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to Alan Nathan's All-Stars. I'm your host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. A new platform called Mediapedia is promising to use artificial intelligence technology to detect and quantify media bias and rate reporters and news organizations by how sharply they lean to one side or other of the political divide. Here with us to talk about it is Christine Cernajewski, President and CEO of Mediapedia. Welcome to Alan Nathan's All-Stars.
Thanks for having me on. Happy to join you.
You've got media bias. You've got artificial intelligence. You have everything that exhilarates and terrifies me in one story here.
You're right. That is terrifying when you think about it that way.
But it's really hard to do. Isn't it hard to quantify media bias? We've all been trying to do it without AI for quite some time. And really, when you're measuring objectivity, isn't that a subjective judgment itself to some degree?
Well, you know, that is a great question. And there are several organizations that do rate media bias. And the way they do it is through a panel of people who determine themselves whether or not an article is biased, or they take a survey, a poll of people to find out what they think of that article and the bias leaning. What we've done is we've taken AI to analyze a reporter's body of work and to determine bias. And here's why. We think this is a more objective way to do it. Every single article has 8 criteria by which it is measured, and that could be everything from how much space a reporter gives to a particular source, like say a left-leaning source versus a right-leaning source. And it tallies up all those sources and quotes and framing, and it's able to generate a media bias rating. And so we're really excited about this platform because we think it's going to be able to provide the transparency that news consumers so desperately want when they're trying to navigate this very complex and very biased media environment.
And when you launched the Mediapedia, you noticed that everybody has a bias, or reporters are human, journalists are human. Every human being has biases, has something they bring to the table. So to some degree, bias does not always mean political operatives deliberately cooking and crafting stories. It can be their human bias, their personal backgrounds, their educational backgrounds that can bring to the story. Can Mediapedia separate those types of bias and tell us when we're dealing with a journalist who is a political operative versus a human being just making human bias mistakes?
Yeah, well, let me start with this. First of all, as you mentioned, everyone has bias. Mediapedia understands that. And we certainly do expect journalists to have bias because they are human. After all, the problem is when, and this happens in legacy media, they purport to be objective when everyone knows that the bias bleeds into the story. And so what we're asking is for transparency. Now, if a reporter works for an openly right-leaning publication or an openly left-leaning publication, we know what their bias is. So we feel like we're getting truth about how the reporter has developed that story. That's different with legacy media. And so what we're trying to drive is transparency and to say, own your bias. We're in a new era right now where there's a proliferation of media or reporting on social media. And so what we're saying in this new media environment is things have changed. Let's just own the bias, and people, news consumers, can have more confidence when they understand the bias. But to answer your other question about whether someone is a pundit or an operative, we are going to separate what are the actual, you know, so-called journalists from those who are, say, influencers. That would be a different category.
That's a great point. I mean, there is a difference, but it's a blurred difference. The distinction between journalism and influencing has gotten a little murky over the last few years. And I think to your point, a lot of media organizations, reporters, and writers are not honest about their biases. And it's a little different when you're looking at someone who will openly tell you, I'm as conservative as the day is long, or I'm a liberal pundit, or I'm a former Democrat consultant, and they're honest with you, versus somebody who says, I'm an impartial straight shooting reporter, but they're really not.
Yeah, absolutely. And even at Mediapedia, we ourselves, you know, we know we have bias as well. And so we share what our own bias is in our bios. You know, the days of objective journalism, maybe that was a great ideal to have. And I know some people will argue that objectivity is still a thing that journalists should strive for. And that's a really great argument. But in today's media environment, there's too much of a temptation for journalists to present one side a certain way. They come at it with an agenda. And that's why trust in news among Americans is at an all-time low.
One of the things that has long bedeviled students of media bias is that a lot of it is what is not told, what is not included. It's not just about telling a lie or pushing a fake story. It's about just not telling the readers certain things are important. And I'll give you a great example. Right now, if you read a story about immigration and immigration enforcement, major media platforms will almost invariably fail to tell you what the person getting arrested did. They just want to make it look like some innocent person was grabbed for no reason on the street, and you got to read 46 paragraphs down to find out they were wanted for a felony murder charge or something. I mean, how do you quantify that kind of bias? Can you detect bias that's present in what's not being said?
Yeah, that is absolutely correct, and I share that frustration. You know, you can read a story just as you presented, and three quarters of the way through, you think, oh, yeah, that person's terrible. Like, how could they have done that? And then you know, like the rest of the story shares other information to counter it, and then it doesn't provide a balanced picture. So yeah, the AI can pick up how much space you're giving to a certain topic or a certain person. And that's where we feel like this rating that we're providing is far more accurate than a person rating it with their own subjectivity.
And we have another level of bias to deal with now that's it's pretty new, and that's the algorithm. You have social media companies and internet platforms that have become the major source of news for an awful lot of people, and they have their algorithms that will promote or throttle content based on various conditions that might be very different than the biases of the person who wrote the articles.
That's right, and it's contributing to this sort of echo chamber too. It's really interesting when like the legacy media will pick up on certain words or phrases, and it's a chorus, and all of a sudden they're all saying it. It makes it feel like other perspectives don't exist, and so you know, again, that's also something that we're trying to point out through other aspects of our site. We have commentary that we're providing that shows, for instance, how media might cover something in the Trump administration versus how they've covered that same topic in the Biden administration. And again, that's to sort of crack through that chorus that can occur when legacy media all says the same thing.
Have you got a website for Mediapedia? Do you want the end users to be going there and checking out your work?
We sure do, mediapedia.org. And I'll just say that we are still in a beta model. We will have a lot more content coming in the new year, but we do encourage everyone to go check it out.
I hope they will. I wish you all the best success. Christine Cernajewski, President and CEO of Mediapedia, thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News. Thanks for joining us on this hour of Alan Nathan's All-Stars.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.